the end of the last sitting during the dialogue, I was asked a question, how is it that I just kind of gently kind of go flowing from out of it to into it and aware of it? And now I know why. Okay? I paid attention. I was looking to see, oh, how does that happen? And actually, when somewhere in the middle of the sitting, I noticed that when the attention gets absorbed in the object, gets absorbed in the experience, I kind of go, and I lose a little bit of the recognition. And as soon as I recognize that, it's like, oh yeah, right. That's how it is. You know, it's just kind of like when you're just experiencing something, but without awareness, you're just kind of. And then when you experience it with awareness, sometimes we kind of feel into it and we lose the recognition because the feeling is so either pleasant or so full. And then when you lose the recognition, you're kind of in it. You know, you're kind of like, it's kind of cuddly there, you know. And then when you recognize it, it's like, oh yeah, right. There's this awareness back here that's aware of that feeling. So that's why, to answer the question of an hour ago. So how was that? Anything new? I know there's something new, but what? Yeah.
So when I was meditating, there was a tightness in my body, and I was, I want to say trying. I was trying to relax it.
Yeah.
And what was happening is my aversion was getting in there, and I felt myself. Telling myself the whole story about it.
So you're telling yourself the whole story about the tightness of the body and why you couldn't relax.
I couldn't relax it, and you know, I was just getting tighter and tighter and tighter.
Yeah.
And aversion was getting in there, wanting something different. And so then I thought, oh, this isn't working. So I went into hearing.
Oh, you went into hearing.
I went into hearing because I wanted to, instead of being a laser on that tightness, I wanted to open things up a little bit.
Instead of laser beaming the tightness out of aversion, trying to nuke it into oblivion, now you're trying to kind of smother it with love and honey and molasses. Okay.
But yeah. I saw all that. I saw I was doing all that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
that's good.
Then that wasn't working too great. So then
wait a minute. Wasn't working? I mean, what are you trying to do? We're not trying to do anything. We're not trying to do any work. We're just recognizing. This is what's going on. Man, the mind is really struggling with this. Wow, poor old mind.
Well, and then I opened my eyes so I could just get out of the intensity.
If you don't like the channel, change it, right? Yeah, no, sometimes we have to do that. Sometimes, you know, we just get so kind of entangled in something, you know, you know, just like you were doing, you're something, you can't be with it, you can't figure it out, you can't fix it, you can't, you know, even though you know you're not supposed to be doing those things, you're still trying them, and then you just say, oh, open your eyes and realize, what is wrong with this? You know, yeah, sometimes we just have to change the channel. Now, I'm gonna talk about what you were just saying in a little bit different ways. So when we're practicing, you know, we can be with some things. We can be with some level of discomfort and some level of agitation and some level of remembering and forgetting and remembering and forgetting. But at some points, we just meet a condition that we just can't be with. It's like we meet an overwhelming force of resistance in the mind or judgment in the mind or you know, tension in the body or something, and so you're going along, you're noticing, until you hit this immovable force. And whatever you try, you can't, you know, try all kinds of skillful things and unskillful things, and you can't really work with it. It is wisdom that says, wait a minute, I can't be mindful of this. I can't be aware. I can't just be aware of this. There's an engaging entanglement with it. That's being entangled, isn't it? That's being entangled in it with aversion and judgment and trying to fix it. And so you're not really being aware. You're not being mindfully aware. You know that's what's going on, but you're entangled in it. It's wisdom that says, wait a minute. I can't be aware of this. I can't just relax, open, allow, notice, right? And so then we say, okay, need to back up. You need to back away from that experience. Turn your attention to something else that is not going to be a struggle. It's not going to be, you're still going to be mindful. So what you said, you opened your eyes. Okay, so you turn away from this internal beating your head against this immovable thing. You open your eyes and you notice, oh, seeing, hearing, breathing. Oh, okay. So you're still being mindful. You're still recognizing the present moment, but you're turning your attention away from what you can't be mindfully aware of, to what you can be mindfully aware of. That's wisdom. Wisdom that recognizes, can't, not getting, this is a struggle. And we just say, oh, turn to something else. Turn to something that you can be with in a non-struggling, open, receptive way. And then when you recharge your batteries and you kind of get a little momentum to that awareness and there's a little clarity and stillness and stability and whatnot, then you can kind of just let the unfolding happen again, not choosing to go back to what you were struggling with, not choosing to hang on to what you were had turned to out of intention. Okay? Then you just kind of relax that and just let, again, the moment reveal itself to you. So, yeah. The lesson from this is, when you find yourself struggling in a way that you can't be mindfully aware of, meaning you're getting entangled in it, you got a story about it, and you're caught in the story and you can't get out, then, when you recognize that, just, whoa, can't be mindful here, I'm entangled. Okay? Turn to something else. Keep the continuity of awareness going, though. So what you're doing is you're refreshing your attention, you're refreshing your awareness on a more neutral object. So what we do sometimes is we pendulate. You're up against this brick wall, and then you turn your attention back to something that you can be aware of. It can be just sitting, open your eyes, whatever, and you pendulate your attention to something that you can be aware of, and then you just, when you got a little momentum there, a little relaxed and present, then you come back and take another look. And you just touch it, that immovable entangling force. You kind of be aware, until you get entangled. Then you back off and you go over to something neutral again. Okay? So this is the way you get familiar with the obstacles in the mind, the things that you can't be aware of yet because you just get entangled in them. It can be fear, it can be anger, it can be struggle, it can be tension, it can be anything. But there are some things that are just not fluid in the mind. The mind is really gripped by them. And you'll know them by the continuity of the narrative. I'm struggling with this. I can't. I. It's good. Good. Yeah.
Your very helpful instructions to have an intent of acceptance.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was beneficial for me this period mm-hmm. because one of the things that was going on was the felt sense of me behind my face,
mm-hmm.
this meanness or whatever, I don't mm-hmm. know.
Yeah.
And I was able to just sort of notice it. Notice when that, I'll call it an illusion or delusion, when that illusion. I just kind of noticed it with sort of more acceptance than usual.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just one more, in a way, it was just one more thing, the sound of someone coughing over here.
That's right. So that's good. When you have an attitude, when you remember to have an attitude of just receive, allow, be interested in, rather than judge, evaluate, get rid of. And it's just like, oh, because we have habits of judging everything. And once you get into the Buddhist language, as soon as you see yourselfing, then we judge that. Oh, this is not good. This is, you know. And so even having the attitude of open, receptive, acknowledge, accept, don't push. Even with that, can be very skillful. That's good. Yeah. I would call that, you were talking about that selfing, when you get kind of in it, when you notice you're caught in it, is being identified with awareness or being identified with the knowing, the knower, the narrator, whatever. So it's a form of attachment. It's a form of craving, grasping, is being identified with. Sometimes we own, we grasp to own and claim as mine. Sometimes we identify with experience as me. So identifying and ownership are the two ways of grasping. So that's identification with. Good. Anything happen over on the side of the room? Everybody's over there. Yeah.
It's very seductive for me.
Yeah.
It's one of the places that I will go to before going out.
Yeah. So the comment is that little cozy place that I was talking about where you kind of get absorbed in something. You call it going into trance, a trance-like state, which is the last piece of recognition before you go out, meaning the lights are out, right? You go into this tunnel of trance and end up in the darkness of total delusion. But yeah, okay, trance, getting absorbed in. What actually happens there is you lose the clear perception, meaning the recognition of what's going on. Clear perception is the proximate cause for the continuity of mindfulness, or for mindfulness. I should say, clear perception is a cause for mindfulness, which is remembering to recognize the present moment. So if you don't have clear perception, you're less likely to be mindful, meaning remembering to recognize. That's exactly it. Trance, getting absorbed in. But we like it. The thing is, it's pleasant. That's the seductive piece. When you get into there and you're not kind of recognizing, you're just kind of oozing into something, melting in and just kind of merging with it. It's like, ah. Now, you know, some of you will know and the language will be familiar, but you know the three trainings of the Buddha's Noble Eightfold Path is sila, which is purifying the speech and behavior so that you don't act out the transgressive torments that cause harm to other people. And samadhi is purifying your mind momentarily of the obsessive torments so that you don't beat yourself up, you don't get entangled in them. And then wisdom is the purifying your understanding of latent delusion and misunderstanding, okay? So this samadhi is the samadhi of purifying the mind of these obsessive torments can be two kinds of samadhi. It can be the samadhi of absorption, which is, the Buddha taught a lot of practices for the samadhi of absorption, with samadhi being the purification of mind, not obsessing, but you get absorbed in the experience, like loving kindness. You practice loving kindness, if you practice it really good, man, you can get totally absorbed in loving kindness and you're just walking around oozing love to everybody. Okay? And that's good. You know, the Buddha praised that a lot. And there's other absorptions, other ways, other means of absorption. But in Vipassana, we're not getting absorbed in the object. We're observing it to understand its nature. Okay? So that's where the clear perception of the nature of the experience is necessary for the development of insight or vipassana practice. So you have to kind of keep from getting absorbed in the experience and keep recognizing its nature. So another way of doing the practice, or another checking your attitude of mind, is understanding that whatever you're experiencing, you know, that leads you into the trance, or that leads you into the identification, or leads you into, you know, the tightness of the body. Oh, this is the nature of trance. It's like this. So this is the nature of pain. This is the nature of struggle. Oh, this is the nature of fear. This is the nature of whatever, whatever. This is the nature of being identified with something. So that what you're recognizing is the unique nature of this experience, this state of mind or this physical experience. And then when you are able to recognize the uniqueness of each moment's experience, you know the difference between aching and hardness, hardness and trembling, trembling and pressure, pressure and stretching. So physically, you know those differences because they have very different natures. But you also know the difference between, and the discern, you're able to discern the distinction, the uniqueness of fear, anxiety, depression, despair, hopelessness, contentment, complacency, equanimity. There's very refined discernment because each of those experiences has its own unique thumbprint or heart print in the mind. They feel different. But you only know that because of your experience, your ability to kind of be with it and recognize it. So it can be helpful to know that when you're experiencing something, you're observing its unique nature. Oh, this is the nature of fear. Oh, this is the nature of anxiety. Oh, this is the nature, rather than I'm anxious. Now, you know, when we feel anxious, or when we feel struggle, or when we feel fear, or we feel anything, we usually recognize it as I'm afraid, I'm upset, I'm angry, I'm impatient. And we get identified with it. We don't recognize what we're identified with, and we don't recognize ourselves. We're lost in it. It's like, here's where I use my two hands as kind of instructions. The experience arises, anxiety, and the awareness gets lost in it. I'm anxious. Oh. But we often, when we're caught in anxiety, or when I'm anxious, there's a narrative of it. I'm anxious because they said this, they said that, I don't know, I read the news, and what if, and oh my gosh. So there's a narrative, there's a story going on about my anxiety. It's always my story, the story of me that's anxious. So once you see that, then you can start thinking about, oh, I'm anxious because da, 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 da. You're no longer kind of totally absorbed in the anxiety, but you're thinking about the anxiety. Okay? So when you're lost in it and you're identified with it, you're anxious. When you have some kind of awareness, not mindful awareness yet, but some kind of awareness, then we can think about our anxiety. We can think about our fear, how we got into this fear, how we got into this anxiety, how we got into this struggle, how we got into this depression. We know the thoughts of them. But that's still not free. You're still entangled in thinking about it. That's obsessing. But when you're able to be aware that anxiety has arisen, then anxiety arises. You're not anxious. You're not just thinking about it. You're actually aware of anxiety. Oh, that's a very different experience. But in every case, whether you're anxious, thinking about anxiety, or aware of anxiety, anxiety is present. Initially, we're identified with it. That's when we're suffering. When we're obsessing about it, we're thinking about it. And when we're actually mindful of it, we're free of it. We're not identified with it. It's not my anxiety. I'm not anxious. Anxiety has arisen due to its own causes and conditions, and its nature is being known by awareness. That's how we become free of anxiety. You're no longer identified with it. There's an awareness of it. You understand the nature of anxiety, and you don't get lost in it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was huge, I think.
You're right. I just told you about how awareness leads to understanding, leads to liberation, end of the journey, end suffering. Yes, okay, next.
So that piece of, there's fear.
Fear, huh? Say what?
So there's fear.
Fear. Fear arises.
Fear arises, and there's that movement towards understanding what the fear is.
Well, first of all, how do you notice that fear is there? Because you feel afraid.
Right. So okay. If I say, oh, I'm afraid.
I'm afraid. Okay, this is I'm afraid.
Yeah.
Lost in it.
And then into that, going to explaining it to myself what that's about.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm curious about that relationship between something there around, oh, it's that, I don't know, that bear over there.
Uh-huh. Yes.
So there's something there about if I just become, not just, if I become aware of
fear,
the nature of fear,
yeah,
without then my story about what this is about,
mm-hmm.
Does skillful action emerge from that?
Okay, so the question is about fear, or it could be any other emotional,
yes.
And any other,
yes.
Kind of dramatic emotional entanglement, involvement. And sometimes when a psychophysical knot arises, it can be, you know, like fear. Fear arises and boom. And you know what? We can be sitting here in this safe room with our eyes closed and some memory comes up of something that happened when you were afraid and you can get flooded with the experience of fear right here in this totally safe place, right? Well, what's actually going on there? Well, you know, you're kind of I don't want to say you're reliving. You can't relive anything. But you're reconnecting with that kind of experience, and you're experiencing fear. Okay, so then you see, oh, what has arisen is fear. So I'm going to use my two fists together in this entangled embrace. Fear arises. And then when we see it, when mindfulness has enough steadiness to go, oh, fear is being known. Well, we see the outside layer of this knot, fear, and then what? Oh, we remember. Oh, yeah, I remember. I was walking down the street, and that's what happened. So then you have a memory, and as you feel that memory, as you remember that memory, and you are mindful of that, then you may recognize, oh, geez, when I felt that, you know, my body was going, my heart was racing, and my body felt quivery, and I felt gooey, and all those sensations come back, and you start tracking all those sensations, and you go, oh my God, this is tightness, it's quivering, and okay. So now you've got a story, you've got a memory, you've got a feeling in the body. The only thing that's left to notice is the feeling in the heart, the mind. So when we have these not the only thing, because when a psychophysical knot like that arises, it's like not just one memory of fear. It's like all your memories of fear, all your experiences of fear come, not just one, but sometimes all of them, and they just kind of peel off in rapid layers of seeing this, feeling this, feeling these sensations. This is the story. This is my judgments. This is what I'm going to do to never be afraid of that person again. All kinds of strategies for dealing with fear also come into view to interrupt the awareness of it. Did you hear that? All of our strategies for dealing with the unpleasant emotional crap that is most of life, right? All those strategies, they also come into view. And if we buy into them, if we believe them, if we don't see them as just, oh, this is planning, this is strategizing, this is scheming, how I'm going to deal with it next time, or what I should do, or, you know, we're doing some kind of positive affirmation. I'm not really afraid. I shouldn't be afraid. There's nothing to be afraid of. You know, all that stuff. Those are just strategies for avoiding feeling the actual experience of fear or anger or impatience or depression or whatever it is. So when the psychophysical knots come into view, you see them and there's a narrative to them. There's a whole physical three-dimensional anatomical thing to be surveyed of what's going on in the body when this mental state arises, and all the stories that come with it, and all your other strategies for dealing with it, basically to get rid of it. You know, if you don't see those strategies, if you don't see them as strategies that take you away from the experience, then you'll believe them and you'll act them out. Symptomatic relief only. You can get some good symptom relief from strategies, no doubt about it, but no understanding, no freeing of your sense of identity or identification with this experience. So it's only when you're able to stay with it, hang in there with it, as unpleasant as it is, and see all of these movements of the mind to explain it, to figure it out, to get rid of it, to judge the other person, to blame somebody for it, to do all those things that you see about it. You see them, you see them, you see them, you accept them, you accept them. This is it, this is it, this is what's being known, moment to moment to moment. You know, eventually, you're just with the feeling of fear. No story, no strategy, no blaming, no nothing. Just fear. What's that feel like? You know it's not pleasant, right? It is not satisfactory, right? It is, it's really dukkha. If you know that word, dukkha, this is the big word in Buddhism, you know? First Noble Truth of Dukkha. Things are painful, they're unsatisfactory, they're oppressive, they're suffering, they have this quality. So certainly fear has that quality, right? But the other thing you also see is, I didn't make this happen. These things, this thing has arisen due to these external conditions and internal strategies and, you know, defenselessness and lack of seeing clearly. And I get entangled in this drama that's so much dukkha. This entanglement in seeing how you didn't make it happen, you can't make it stop happening, but you can notice it. That's its anatta characteristic. That's its not self characteristic. It's not under your control. It's put together by causes and conditions and bits and pieces and memories and sensations and explanations and strategies, and then you've got this big suffering emotional drama. It's not self. It's not you. It's not who you are. It's not who you are. It's just kind of put together for an experience. It's an experience. It's an appearance in the mind due to causes and conditions, all of which are outside of your control. Right? Like a rainbow. I've used this image a lot. A rainbow appears in the sky. It's a colorful appearance due to causes and conditions. Moisture, sunlight, viewing from an angle, a certain angle, and eyes that work. If any of those causes and conditions aren't there, there's no rainbow. But even if they're all there, there's still no rainbow. It's just an appearance due to conjunction of conditions. And when you see, there's really no inherent anything to a rainbow. It's just an appearance. You can't touch it. You can't pick it up. You can't put it in the box. You can't send it to me in Maui. We don't need it in Maui. We got plenty of rainbows in Maui. But anyway, you still can't do it. You can't taste it. It's got no smells, no size, no shape. It's just an appearance. It has no inherent entity-ness. Does it? A rainbow. Right? Well, when you see this about the things that you're experiencing as my emotional drama, it's just an appearance due to, well, impersonal causes and conditions that arise and cause suffering. If you get identified with them, you suffer. If you can explain it, you're still suffering obsessively. If you can be aware of it, you just see and you understand. This is dukkha. Arising due to causes and conditions outside of my control. It's not me, it's not mine, it's not who I am. If you can do that, if you can bear with the feeling that comes with this dukkha, if you can bear with this dukkha with awareness, just like, this is what it feels like, it's really unpleasant. You will notice something that you can't get any other way. It doesn't last very long. We think it lasts forever. You know, I got afraid then. If it happens again, I'm going to get afraid again. No, you don't. It's impermanent. The way when you got afraid last time, and when you got impatient, and when you got angry last time, it's over. Those conditions don't exist, except as a story in your mind that you get identified with. That thing's over. It's gone. Right? Except the story about it, the narrative, the identification with it as me, as mine, as who I am, is still in here. And every time we access it, we get re-entangled in the suffering. So when you see, because you're right there with the pain of fear, or the pain of loneliness, or the pain of shame, or the pain of anger, or the pain of impatience, or the pain of judgment, or the pain of whatever it is, and you're with it, and you feel it, you feel it, you feel it, you feel it. And you understand its dukkha characteristic, and you understand its conditional nature, and eventually you understand its impermanence. Now, when it's impermanent, that means you're seeing it, you're feeling it, you're with it, it's gone. What happens when the pain disappears? Well, you'll have to find out. But that's where we're going with this practice, okay? Did you understand? I hope you. I mean, that was a pretty good elaboration, I got to say. Thanks. That came out okay. I do it differently every time, but this was a good one. You got that on me? Got that recorded? Okay. So what I just talked about is the power of awareness to see through the illusion of self into the non-self nature of things, and we do that through just allowing ourselves to feel and recognize clear perception. You got to have that recognition, clear perception of what's going on, what makes up this whole package of suffering. And we see all the bits and pieces. And then we see the three insights. The three Vipassana insights are, this is really unsatisfactory. You don't just kind of believe that. You feel how unsuitable, unsatisfactory this is. You see its conditioned nature. You understand that it's composite. It's a put together package, and you understand that it's impermanent. You don't just see impermanence. You don't just see fluxing stuff. There's no understanding in just seeing strobe lights, but there's an understanding of like, that's not solid. That's not eternal. Oh, that's an understanding. So when we understand the three characteristics, then we, my sense of self, is free of that, whatever we were entangled in, free of it. Lunchtime. Okay, so you can turn the...